You've arrived here at episode 363. Have you ever considered what changed about human health since light bulbs were invented? Most of us haven't given it a thought, but the reality has become so bad that unnatural light is polluting our world in every single direction we look. Phones, TVs, downlights, menus at restaurants, speedometers in cars. The list is endless, and the consequences of having such an overwhelmingly polluted visual field of too much light all of the time has huge health consequences, ranging from insulin and blood sugar issues, diabetes, obesity, metabolism, cancer, sleep, and the list of negative health impacts seems endless here too. On today's episode, we discuss an area of health which is fringe in the world of science and definitely fringe in the world of mainstream medicine, but has a lot of emerging scientific research to support these ideas. We talk into some intricate scientific concepts here to guide you in the understanding of what's going on with all the toxic light in your life. And the great news is that the fix is actually so easy and for the most part, free. Stick this one out to the end, and I apologize in advance if you have to then pick up your brain off the floor with a straw. All right, let's do it. The science of light.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? Good that you and I are here hanging out doing this again. Or maybe you're here for the first time. Either way, I'm jazzed about it. So in 2024, it's my mission to coach 500 people to get control of their sugar cravings and sugar binges so they can stop yo-yo dieting, stop obsessing about food, and finally create a body that they feel confident being in. And there are so many layers to that conversation. And so if you'd like to get some support with your emotional binge or overeating, my links are in the show notes below. Scroll down there, click the link, and pop in an inquiry about our programs. All right, so I want to introduce you to a true holistic health practitioner. This woman has so many disciplines and modalities under her belt. She appears more like a sensei or a keeper of wisdom more than anything else, someone that you might find deep inside your own mind whilst on a mushroom journey. But when I say many disciplines and modalities, she has been completing education and formal studies for a very long time in naturopathy, quantum biology, functional nutrition, corneotherapy, beauty and dermal therapies, NLP, lymphatic massage, feminine embodiment yoga, qigong, reiki, mindfulness, breathwork, acupressure, and so many more. And this has been spanning over 3 decades of work. Who am I talking about? I'm talking about Pia Kynoch, whom is here with me today. She's a well-being practitioner, coach, researcher, and author, and is passionate about catalyzing a major shift to a true root cause approach for healing. And it's probably to a level of depth of root cause healing that you've never thought about before. As you can tell, Pia is basically a wizard, and she's here to help us unlock a more profound understanding of our mind-body connection and the impact on the world that we can all have. Pia, welcome to the show.
Oh, what a beautiful introduction, and it is my absolute honor to be here. I love sharing about the depths of interconnectedness of all life. And I love working with the principles of kind of zooming in and zooming out and looking at different perspectives of our different ecosystems of wellness. And that's what I'd really love to offer you and your audience today. And I feel like it's going to be a really beautiful thing. I love to begin just kind of co-creating the container of space, although we're not actually physically here in person with each other. Maddie and I having this conversation, we're all here together and we're all here to learn. And there's something about the resonance of these energies that are orchestrated for all of us to grow. And so I really want to honor that and acknowledge that. And so no matter what you are doing in this moment of listening, I do just invite you just to take a moment to notice your posture. Like noticing your feet on the floor or the way that your butt is sitting on the seat and the shape of your spine, maybe even noticing and tracking your breath and how that might engage with a little more noticing of different muscles of your system. Perhaps you could relax your tongue and your jaw. And I'm just going to invite in 3 breaths where no matter the length of your inhale, we're just going to double the length of your exhale. That's it. And so wherever you are in your breath cycle, just exhale now and then inhale. Double the length of your exhale as you let go and release. And just do that two more times. And as you breathe, I'm just going to call in the four directions, the four seasons, the four life cycles and the five elements and all beings of the highest light and the highest love and the original custodians of all of the lands on which we live, work and play. And just asking for this conversation to be divinely directed so that we can all grow and expand and evolve in our highest timelines. And I just also want to offer deep gratitude for all of the different moving pieces that have brought us here together. And I'm just going to complete this little container shape with a deep and humble thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I love to bring in a little gratitude into conversations. I feel like it can really change how we're thinking and how we're feeling, as does that postural alignment and just a little noticing of our breath. I think
I feel so chill right now.
Yeah, beautiful. I think that it really, I believe that there are some really easy ways to create shifts in our whole mind-body system and to interact with our body and energy in really optimal ways. And it's part of the reason why I have gathered so many different disciplines and modalities along my path. I mean, I was really trying to understand myself for this whole journey, and I still am, you know, on a deep quest to understand myself, know myself, accept myself and love myself even more than ever before. And that's what I really, you know, hope to inspire in all beings that I come into contact with.
I'm curious what began that desire, because some people go through their whole life never looking inward. Never going for that inquisition or that growth. It's just, you know, every day is Groundhog Day. This is what's expected of me. Like, what invited you to begin that journey?
I feel like I definitely come from a courageous bloodline. And actually, Matt did ask me about my surname as we started the podcast, Kynoch. It does mean hard-headed chief, and my first name, Pia, does mean pious and good. And I feel like there's something about that combination that really does allow me literally to be invested in curiosity and leadership and being self-led. And I am over and over again willing to put my hand up to take on a little more self-responsibility, a little more self-mastery. And, you know, my fascination with basically trying to unravel myself and who I was came from a feeling so dysregulated, you know, from kind of childbirth onwards, you know, like my younger years and all the way through my teenage and adult years. And we haven't actually talked about this, but I've come from a very strong addiction background. And so having dealt with numerous layers and intensities and degrees of addictions through a pretty wide spectrum for, you know, a huge proportion of my life and doing my best to understand that, you know, I had a cognitive intelligence. I understood what I was doing, and yet I couldn't quite find enough safety or belonging in myself to create the changes that I felt like I needed to really grow and evolve without the addictions keeping on coming back in. So That has led me down further and further and further and further down this path of kind of root cause, you know, as mentioned, like some of my disciplines include skin therapies. Like I really looked after people from the outsides. And then that led me to realize that I needed to understand more about the insides, because we are this combination of inner and outer and everything in between, and communication of our bodies and how we can really interact with our bodies in significant ways. And so that has led me down all of these different pathways to now have landed on the fact that, you know, positive and negative charge and flow is underappreciated. And I really love to dance around with these conversations of masculine and feminine and light and dark and up and down and left and right, you know, like where are we on this axis and where have we courageously explored to even understand what our axis is, you know, like if I have never really fully tapped into my grief, how could I ever fully tap into my joy? Those kind of conversations are also really important to me.
Yeah, it's incredible. Like just I like that sort of analogy of, you know, starting on the outside with skin and that type of work and going inward, because I mean, one of the first things that you probably would have learned maybe before your education, but is, you know, skin and the gut are often very closely related. And so, without understanding one fully, you can't fully understand the other.
Totally. And then I also studied NLP actually before I studied gut, because I recognized that, I mean, my client base was predominantly women and still is actually, but just how much self-confidence and self-worth is wrapped up with the perception of self in the mirror, and how much those looping thoughts of I'm not worthy, I'm fundamentally broken, I'm unlovable, you know, I'm just about to be rejected, how much those thoughts change the stress response in skin. And so even though I might have been doing everything right, like ticking all the boxes on a topical nature, you know, on a skin-based nature, I wasn't, unless I started doing work with people's inner language, I wasn't able to address that. And then once I started addressing that, that was when I was really like, okay, I'm really going to have to study more about the nutrition components and then naturopathy. And at that stage, I really believed that, you know, the gut was the answer. And then when I finished my naturopathy degree, I literally left with more answers than what I started with, which for a curious mind, I don't know whether that's helpful or unhelpful. But then I realized really overall, the nervous system is in charge of the digestive system. So no matter what is going on, it still came back to me to trauma-based patterns. And then I started studying neuroception, like nervous system development from the time of conception onwards. And I started becoming deeply trauma-informed and looking at a lot of somatic or body-based processes to engage in healing in transformational ways, like really unlocking some of the bracing and the unconscious bracing and contraction and tightening patterns that people can have literally moving, you know, moment to moment to moment through their day, you know, without realizing that, you know, I've just switched on my phone and I saw a message and, you know, my gut just got really tight, or I've just answered a phone call or opened a letter or, you know, checked my credit card statement. And all of a sudden their body is bracing against the anticipated threat of what yet has not arrived. And the present moment is completely lost. And so that nervous system understanding was huge for me. And then I realized that holding the nervous system is the fascia, you know, like this interconnected network. Like it's polymorphic, meaning it takes lots of different shapes. It's like our blood and our lymph, and it's like the interconnected tissue of our entire system. And then from that fascia understanding, I started going deeper and looking at like electrons and protons and more about our atomic structure, that the things that we can't see but are these fundamental particles that create us, and how light is being translated by every part of us from skin to within, and how that connects to water, which connects to fascia, and how disempowered we can unconsciously be when we have no understanding of how light is being translated, how water works within our body, and how our nervous system is responding to those cues, as well as our mental cues, our thought cues.
Yeah, amazing. So we've got skin, then we went to the gut, then we realized the nervous system impacts the gut, and then we realized that the fascia holds the nervous system, and then light.
Yes.
So let's go there. Let's go into that conversation, because there's probably a big question mark right there for a lot of people at the minute. Like, so we've gone further inward to the body and we're talking about light, which is external to the body, generally speaking, in general knowledge terms. So let's clear that up.
Yes. Yeah, totally. There is external light sources and we are internally producing light, and I'd love to explain those different components. But I'll start first with light. And, you know, I feel like when people start beginning to understand these light cues and how essential light exposure is for our health or dis-ease status and what light frequencies are, then they can understand the consequences of every single decision that they're making in the day and how that might be impacting them and their trajectory of well-being or not. And so basically, we all know, but maybe we haven't really thought about it consciously, all organisms have evolved around, you know, daily, monthly, yearly changes in the sunlight. Yeah, like we are diurnal animals, like, you know, the sun rises, the sun sets, and our biorhythms are intimately related to that sunlight and darkness cues of Earth. And different aspects of the light wavelength and intensity over the course of the whole day, you know, and we're meant to be in bed at nighttime, but even at nighttime, there's different light wavelengths and intensities. But during the day, particularly from dawn to dusk, there are these myriad of changes that occur literally kind of minute to minute with light wavelengths and intensities that our body is translating, our body is listening to. and it deeply affects our physiology, our behavior, like our physiology and our psychology. You cannot separate them. And so that, you know, I don't want to get into like all the crazy details, but just for ease of understanding, depending where we live in the world, like our latitude will change how much sunlight, the wavelength and intensity that we have at different times, but also, you know, like the atmospheric conditions, like pollution levels, you know, that those other aspects can mean that there are depths of understanding that are even deeper than what I'm going to talk about today. So what's good to know is that there are longer wavelengths of light at dawn and dusk and shorter wavelengths during the day. So the spectrum of light changes. And, you know, like if you think about the rainbow and there's that little anagram, Bibgior, so violet, indigo, blue, green, yellow, orange, red, that is the visible portion of spectrum of light. And that covers a light wavelength range from like about 380 to 760 nanometers. Nanometers is just like the size of it. So these different wavelengths have different sizes. The size, like the 380 is a shorter wavelength, 760 is longer, that's heading towards the red spectrum. The violet and blue spectrum is the shorter wavelength spectrum, around the 380 to kind of 500 nanometer length. So each wavelength, as I said, can activate different photoreceptors in our body, different light receptors in our body, and therefore each specific color is experienced differently. What's so beautiful about natural light is that pretty much from dawn to dusk, it has the entire spectrum of both visible light and invisible light available for us. There's never a color that's missing. They're just in varying amounts. Most people don't realize is that the invisible spectrum percentage of light is actually really high. It's over 40%. So we can't see those wavelengths, but our body can, our photoreceptors can. And that's really important when it comes to discussions about real light, sunlight, and artificial light. And I really want to land some of these conversations today. I also just want to, again, without getting too deep about it, but light is electromagnetic and it's a wave. It can oscillate in different directions and it carries information. And that information can shift our internal magnetic fields, our chemical interactions, like the crystalline structures of our body, different mechanical stresses. Like there's all of these amazing components that shift in our body because of beams of light. And this is where our body interacts with it, not just through our skin. Like I'm pretty sure everyone will understand that when you go out in the skin, we tan, yeah? Like because we've got a lot of cells in there, they're called melanocytes, and they make something called melanin. So melanin is a highly protective pigment that is designed to absorb different spectra of light, but it also absorbs like a very broad spectrum of all different types of electromagnetic radiation. Melanin is an incredible molecule, and I'll talk more about that soon, but I just kind of want to come back to this skin production. So initially, my understanding of melanin and melanocytes and light was literally just related to my skin and my eyes. That's the only places that I kind of thought that light interacted with. And as a skin therapist for a long time, I was really worried about the impacts of sunlight upon aging and pigmentation and radical oxygen species production and how much that impacted my clients and my own trajectory of skin health. And I've come a complete about circle on my beliefs around sun and sunlight and how much we need and how often, that is for sure.
You and I both. And my beginning was as a cancer scientist. So I began as like, stay away from the sun and slip, slop, slap. And now I basically say the more sun you get, the less likely you are to experience most disease outcomes.
Totally. And actually, I'll park it for now, but just remember to, you know, maybe if we have time to talk about building a solar callus, I'd love to bring that in because I feel like there's you know, ways in which we can interact with the sun that it can be stressful for our system. And I want to kind of keep it in a way that's really, you know, helpful overall for our system. And so I'm coming back to these melanocytes, these pigment-producing cells, and melanin, the pigment that they produce. It's found in so many other parts of the body apart from the skin and the eyes. Like it's literally through all of our senses. So our entire skin obviously is a sense organ. Our eyes is a sense organ, but it's also inside our ear. It's also inside of our brain. And why would we have like a huge amount of melanin, like a literally a big black dark pigment liquid sitting in the middle of our brain if we don't get sunlight there? Don't you feel like that's odd? And when I started thinking about that, I was like, yeah, it's also wrapped around our meninges, which is the protective membrane surrounding our brain and our entire spinal cord. We've got melanocytes and melanin in our bones, in our heart, in our vaginal epithelium. And obviously I didn't mention, but in our hair follicles as well. And so if melanin is in all of these different places and it absorbs a broad spectrum of radiation spanning from ultraviolet to infrared wavelengths, don't you find it amazing that our body's got receptors for all of these different wavelengths, basically across every part of our body? I find that amazing. And I was like, okay, I've got a lot more questions now around what light means to health. And then I found out that porphyrins, which are part of like the heme-carrying component in our blood, they also absorb light. Aromatic amino acids, which I can talk about later, they also absorb light. Minerals can reflect and absorb and change the scattering of light. Like we're built of, you know, water can also absorb light and it changes the interactions of the structure of water in our body. We're mainly made of water. We've got proteins and fats that are interacting along with, you know, different vitamins and minerals. And then I realized that all of these different substances always interact with light. And so it started making me think that the melanin is going to have a whole lot of other benefits for us. And some of those other benefits also is that it's a chelator. So it can bind minerals that include metals. It can bind metals, like even heavy metals in our system, and it can bind pesticides. And that means that it can sequester potentially toxic substances. So in the brain, yes, that might be protecting the neurons, for instance, but it's also doing all of these other antioxidant benefits for us. It's transmitting and absorbing and sending out light frequencies. It really has these incredible ways for our body to communicate that I had never thought about before. And so the absorption of light by all of these different factors in our body can trigger conformational changes in the substances that receive it. And a lot of those conformational changes are around the electron flow of our body. And, you know, electrons are these tiny little particles that have a negative charge in our body. And I might just talk about charges just for a moment, just because I feel like can be easy to forget that, you know, our body exists on charges basically. So we've got electrons which have a negative charge. We've got protons that have a positive charge. Every single atom that creates the building blocks of elements, the elements of the periodic table, the elements that literally create all of the different molecules in our body, the molecules that then go on to create different cells, that create different tissues, that create different organs, that create the organism. Doesn't matter how big we go. At the end of the day, when you go backwards down the chain of like what are the building blocks of all these different substances are atoms, and they have even smaller particles. So electrons are one of those particles and protons are one of the other particles. What's really important for all of our different cells is something called a proton gradient, and that helps create a membrane charge. And that means that that's in charge of cell differentiation. So when cells are deciding, you know, how they're working, where they're going, what they're doing, how they're growing, proliferation, how they're dying when they go through apoptosis, how they might migrate and move around, or how they're activated. And so cell membrane voltage, proton gradients, electron flow, these help create the correct boundaries for all of the different cells and tissues and organ systems and ourselves as an organism to understand itself in time and space. And so the proton flow of anything is actually incredibly important. The proton motive force is something where in the electron transport chain where our energy is produced in our cells, electrons are passed from one molecule to another and energy is released in these electron transfers. And that's how we end up producing ATP. And that's how we get the energy currency that drives so much of our processes. That electron flow, though, is not just about making ATP inside of a cell.
So picture this, right? Unlocking your potential, conquering emotional eating, and gaining insights directly from a health and nutrition expert such as myself. That's what we do inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group, which is currently free to join. If you've ever felt trapped by food challenges, struggled with maintaining a healthy lifestyle, or yearned for a community that understands the reasons why you've yo-yo dieted for years, then there's a new chapter waiting to be written. And this is your chance to start writing it by joining us all on Facebook Lives, on engaging posts that push you out of your comfort zone and into growth, and Q&A sessions with me. All of this works as a platform to begin changing your emotional eating problems for good. Oh, and also, as a special gift, you'll receive my transformative How to Turn Food into Self-Confidence ebook. And that's also for free. I get it. Skepticism might linger. You might think, Maddie, I've heard these ads and I'm not sure. Well, at least a quarter of the members inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group have been paying clients of my emotional eating program at some point over the last 3 or 4 years. So if you're not sure, you can post in the group and ask to find out if I'm the real deal or not. It's totally up to you. To join us in the free Healthy Mums Collective and to end your emotional eating and feel good in your own skin and begin that journey, pop down to the show notes below, click the link and breeze through 3 simple entry questions. Join today and let's embark on a journey of growth and empowerment. The link is in the show notes below. I was just going to say as well, ATP are the individual molecules that physically give you energy to move your muscles, to your brain to operate, just for everybody listening. Mm. Like, what is ATP? I'm having university flashbacks from this conversation at the moment.
Oh, great. Well, then actually, so maybe I should just pause for a second and I will come back to the electron and proton conversation, but I will perhaps, should I just shift slightly and just talk about mitochondrial function? Because that has so much to do with the electron flow. So totally. If you think about ourselves as an organism and the organs sitting inside of us, our cells are something pretty similar. Like our cells have a membrane. You can think of it like their own skin. And inside of that skin, they have a whole lot of different organelles. And those organelles have got really established functions, the same as our liver's got an established function, our kidneys, our stomach, all of those kind of things. So you can draw a lot of correlations between what's happening inside of a cell and zoom out and kind of what's happening with us. Inside the cell, there's one particular organelle that's incredibly special. Like I've been doing a lot of research around this particular organelle for quite a while. It's called the mitochondria. And so mitochondria are unusual. They have 2 different membranes. It's the only part of our body that has kind of 2 special insulating structures. And their membranes are actually composed of really special amounts of lipids. Like it, why I'm saying that is kind of denotes how specialized it is, how important it is, how much protection it needs. And so mitochondria in the inner membrane have something called the electron transport chain. And that electron transport chain is actually intimately related with food, like the food that we eat, you know, all of the different proteins and carbs and fats, they all get broken down into smaller and smaller pieces until they make electrons. And so this electron transport chain is taking these tiny little components and moving them across a gradient. And at the same time, it's moving them through this electron transport chain, which is like 5 different proteins. It moves it from, you know, number 1 to number 2 to number 3 to number 4 to number 5. As it's moving the electrons along, it's shoving out the positive, the proton component to the other side of the membrane. So this is creating this beautiful membrane gradient. And that positive and negative separation of charge is a very important feature of human life, human existence, as well as the existence of kind of all life on this planet. So these electrons moving through the chain in a really helpful, happy way is a very big part of our health picture. And I kind of want to, I was thinking about an analogy today. I'm pretty sure a lot of people would have played something like tunnel ball when they were little, when they were in primary school. It was a game that I played where people stick their legs open. They grabbed a ball and they had to, you know, throw it through all of the different legs that were in position. So if you had these 5 people that were playing tunnel ball, yet they all need to be in position for that ball to flow really fast and really firmly down that tunnel, yeah? So the person down the end can take the ball and the game can just kind of keep getting played. The electron transport chain is a little like that. And if you had one of those people in the chain that was in the wrong position, that wouldn't be good. The electrons wouldn't be able to tunnel. The ball wouldn't be able to get through. I hope that that makes sense as an analogy.
Yeah. That's a great analogy.
Yeah. So the shape of the membrane is holding these proteins in the right position. So this is where the lipid structure of the membrane is really important. And again, I'll park this for later, but DHA is a really important ingredient in that membrane structure.
Yep.
But so is the water that surrounds these membranes. So while the electrons are being passed down this chain, the fourth protein, this electron meets water. So a proton and electron, there's an interaction with oxygen and it's the creation of water occurs. The creation of water is partially what supports that membrane arrangement, that membrane alignment, and it keeps those proteins that pass the ball down the chain in alignment.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
Also, I'm a molecular biologist, so right. But it makes perfect sense. I really like that analogy.
To your audience.
Yeah, totally.
So we have oxygen sitting at the end of the electron transport chain. That oxygen is basically accepting electrons and it picks up a proton, it forms water. If oxygen isn't there to accept the electrons, perhaps because the person isn't breathing well enough, or there can be a few other reasons, but the electron transport chain will stop running. If electrons stop flowing down the electron transport train will stop running. This is where things like reactive oxygen species can end up being produced. Reactive oxygen species are when there's too much availability of unstable oxygen that wants to react with other molecules, and it can create a lot of havoc inside of a system. Interestingly, when you asked me about light before and whether we produce internal light, what's now being understood is that the production of reactive oxygen species when a system is under stress, when the electron transport chain isn't working really well, is that you won't just get a decrease in ATP production, you'll get this increase in reactive oxygen species that emit biophotons. Like we're actually emitting light, and that light ends up being a signal for a system that's under stress.
Ah, right.
The more light our electron transport chain is releasing, the higher stress that system is under. So our system is using light and different light wavelengths also as an inner signal for communication. And that totally changes the conformational shape of mitochondria. Part of that conformational shape, interestingly, is also being run by microtubule networks. The microtubule networks are being held together by things like tryptophan, which hold light and can release light. Like light literally is through every single energy layer of what's happening in that mitochondrial matrix. And it's very important to understand, because this is how we get to create and release energy in either ways that are helpful or unhelpful.
I love this.
Right.
This is so good. Yeah, no, this is great. Like, you're sort of on the fringe of my knowledge and understanding of this stuff. And so I feel like I'm as much a student right now as any of the listeners.
Great. Well, my greatest desire is that it makes sense for people, because it can be very challenging to explain this without pictures. And for these tiny, these are like the smallest components of us. You know, a lot of conversations aren't centered around these tiny little components. So even wrapping our heads around the size of some of these things that I'm talking about is kind of beyond most of our thoughts, you know.
Oh, totally. Well, and I think as well, like, you know, hearing the detail is really helpful and informative, and I guess it also adds a layer of credibility to the information as well, which is useful, you know, in this modern world where the language is science, you know. But also, I guess, you know, but wrapping it up nicely, I would say is, you know, like that mitochondria and everything that happens there is what is the lifeblood of your body. You know, it's like, it's what gives you energy. And if the mitochondria aren't functioning, then as you said, reactive oxygen species produces free radicals and therefore inflammation.
Yes.
You know, that can be the consequence of those things. But the thing that's really, you know, that blows my mind, that's, you know, you're talking about right now, is the idea that if there's an interruption in that process, light is emitted, and as the system under stress releases more light. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, that is right.
And we're talking inside the body. Light is being released inside the body.
Yeah, it's called ultra-weak biophoton emission. And it's a pretty new discipline of scientific study. I'm pretty sure the first papers were released in the early, around the 2014, I'm pretty sure. And so ultra-weak biophoton emission is challenging in terms of the equipment that they have to measure it. And a lot of the science that I look at is kind of emerging. Like, this is the quantum biology field, which is, you know, a pretty emergent field. And because it's looking at the smallest, tiniest components, it is mm-hmm. challenging to quantify and measure. Like, technology hasn't quite caught up with those parts. And it's an interesting thing because so much of our body, like the computational, you know, abilities of our brain, that's what a lot of quantum-based computers, quantum computers are based off the technology in our own brain. And science still doesn't have quite the technology to really deeply understand what's going on in our brain. And there's also a big difference between scientific studies that are looking at isolated parts and then the parts that are sort of working in a living system. And I believe that part of that is because, say, with mitochondria and production of ATP, so much of it has been focused on ATP and the fact that it's the powerhouse of the cell because it's making the energy. And I feel like so much of my studies, when I was studying to be a naturopath, it was kind of really minimized or dismissed that they also make water and heat. You know, mitochondria are running at about 50 degrees Celsius. Like, they're running hot, and their inner mm-hmm. mitochondrial membrane is carrying so much voltage charge, it's enough for a lightning strike. Like, the immense power that we have inside of our body is incomprehensible so much of the time. And that's why I really want to bring this depth of kind of gratitude for these parts of us that are doing their best to work for us. I also want to say that mitochondrial membranes are intimately impacted by, you know, plastics and pesticides and glyphosate and, you know, the modern life tools that have been used by big industries to make a lot of money are part of the reason why we're so sick as populations now. And I feel like it's really important. My love of ecosystem wellness is honestly the further away we get from the natural rhythms of Earth, the sicker we are. Like, the less we're involved in our consumer choices for, you know, the products that we're picking to utilize in our life, you know, from the clothes that we're wearing to the foods that we're eating, all of those kind of things. If we're not taking care with those choices, we will be supporting things that destroy our mitochondria, and that destroys our inside water production, our inside biorhythms, and our energy. And I feel like that's what we're seeing in the world. Like, chronic disease doesn't just happen overnight. Like, one in eight Australians are living with chronic dis-ease of some type, and that usually goes along with polypharmacy. Like, it deeply concerns me how a lack of wellness is so prevalent, and I believe that it's intimately related to our exposure to artificial light and exposure to artificial toxins. So,
yeah, I was going to say I totally relate and agree with what you said, is that the more that I delve into holistic angles on anything, it just seems that we're more and more meant to be in nature, you know? And I understand as well the argument that comes back towards me when I say that, because people say, well, we're progressing in one direction, you know, like, we're going in this direction. Why would we go backwards? Mm-hmm. You know, because we see that idea of, like, living in nature and, you know, bare feet. Like, I live in a, you know, the city, mm-hmm. Melbourne, and I wear bare feet to the supermarket mm-hmm. sometimes, right. And I'm regularly barefoot, and I was barefoot a lot growing up. Mm-hmm. And that's regarded as gross mm-hmm. and disgusting. And, you know, and people look at me very strangely. And it's funny, whenever I do this, people that you see their eyes look at my feet and then look at my face and they're like, he doesn't look homeless, but he doesn't have shoes on.
I have had the same experience.
Yeah. And but it's this idea that going back to nature is a step backwards for society, you know, back into the trees, back into the earth, back out into the light. And it's like science and medicine is moving this way, but science and medicine moved so fast, biology can't adapt.
Totally. And also, our technology has moved so fast, our body has not adapted. And if you look at the disease trajectory and how sick people have been becoming over the last, say, 120 years, the correlations that you can draw between artificial light sources, like the first light, they were incandescent back then, but say fluoro light globes were introduced just over 50 years ago, I believe. And so the trajectory of disease has escalated intensively. And if you particularly look at diabetes, that has absolutely escalated in the last 50 years since the introduction of fluoro and then LED lights. And our kids now are being born in a sea of electromagnetic frequencies and energies, the likes of which even my generation, like, I'm just about to turn 46, we have, I didn't know that when I was growing up.
Yeah.
I kind of remember how old I was when I got my first phone, but they were basic, and that was like still 2G or 3G. Now we're up to the 5G Internet of Things, and I feel like what a lot of people aren't understanding is that these man-made waves, which we can't see or taste or touch or smell. And so they kind of, they can easily fall off our radar, literally, but not in terms of our body radar. They are such specialized waves that they are not just interacting with our body in deleterious ways, but all of our different ecosystems, including the space ecosystem. And I feel like that's a really underappreciated thing. Like, just, you know, like we're littering our space environment with satellites. And I did, you know, briefly before talk about how like the charge balance, like the negative and positive separation happens across different scales in our body, but it's happening across different scales from atomic to galactic levels. You know, we've got different charges that are happening on a planetary level, like at the Earth's ionosphere. You know, like one side of it is more positive, the other side of it's more negative. There's this charge balance due to solar radiation, and those things are starting to change slowly over time because of the different satellites that are out in space, the different radiations that are coming from the devices here, all the different satellite towers. Like, there are some things to be aware of, and the more choices that we're making, not just as an individual but as a collective, are driving the processes. Like, no one wants to get sick and die. Like, health
is that's why they're listening.
No one wants to get sick and die. I don't know a person that's ever put their hand up and been like, yeah, me, like, that's what I want in my life. And really, we also want to move from just surviving to thriving, yeah? And, you know, when we're looking even at like populations of people and how isolated they feel and how much anger there is and how much distrust there is, our cells inside of our body are doing similar things. Like, cancer cells are more like unicellular. Like, they are just focused on growing. That's all they really care about. They're really disassociated from the health of the organism as a whole. And I feel like if we're not interconnected with an understanding of the balance between positive and negative and the choices that that means in an everyday life, then we're kind of missing the flow of life. And yeah, that's why I want to have this conversation.
Well, I mean, I've got a literal billion questions, but I'm curious because I see you wearing blue blockers there, and, you know, mine are never far away as well. I've got my pair here too. And so I'm curious to talk about, because in the last, you know, 5-10 years, that's become really popular in the biohacking space and the health and wellness space is, you know, the awareness of blue and white light and how it disrupts your sleep and that type of thing. But I'm curious to get a deeper clarification because obviously when we're talking about light, you know, the sort of person listening might think, well, my house is full of light, I should be fine. And you were just explaining, you know, they're hyper specialized waves. But what is the biological difference in the way that our body experiences, not just our eyes, but like our entire body experiences that external light that is man-made in comparison to walking out in the sun?
Yeah, beautiful. It is the specific wavelengths. And so when we're looking at all of the different lighting inside a house, inside a home, even out on the streets, even car lights now, like, you cannot, basically, if you're out in any arena, get away from blue light exposure. And when you are looking at just one or two wavelengths or frequencies of light, that's when you're going to run into disruption, because we have blue light that's emitted from dawn till dusk all day, but the highest percentage of blue light comes out at midday. And so if our body was in its natural biorhythms, you could imagine that, you know, from dawn, we're waking up, we're becoming less groggy, we're becoming more alert. In the middle of the day, like, that's when we're most alert. Like, we're kind of on the go, we're getting work done, we're, you know, really in the biz, yeah? And then as blue light starts to diminish over the course of the day, it moves into dusk times, there's more red again, and our system is like, oh, amazing, I'm going to slow down. Oh, now melatonin can start being produced and my cortisol levels can go down and I'm going to rest. And in that rest stage, my entire body gets to go through the jobs that it needs to do to, you know, remodel and reshape proteins and digest things that need to get gone and excrete things that need to leave. And those systems work really well. When we're under artificial lights overhead and that are emitting these, or in, you know, right in front of our faces or anywhere that that spectrum is coming from, that we are receiving blue and a little bit of green light frequencies, basically the signal is over and over again, it's midday, 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 it's midday. So just imagine how stressful that can be for your body. And so,
yeah,
visible light, particularly blue wavelengths, can stimulate something called the POMC system. and that like this is a particular type of gene expression that can happen that basically can shift all of our different hormones. So one of the major ones would be ACTH, which makes our adrenal hormones, like it changes the production and secretion of cortisol and androgens from our adrenal cortex. And so if that is to happen over and over and over and over and over and over again, that's where we end up getting changes in our other hormones, like our sex steroid hormones have to be built off the cholesterol that cortisol is also made from. And so when we're seeing, you know, really high rates of infertility and imbalances of estrogen and progesterone and chronic stress hormone related issues, so much of that literally can be placed directly, you know, on the weight of our blue light exposure, our artificial light exposure. And so I now use my, I've got three different pairs of blue light blockers. I've got clear ones, yellow ones, and red ones. And so they do different things at different parts of the day, but particularly when I'm sitting in front of a device, and that's my life. I do spend a lot of time online. I spend a lot of time researching. I spend a lot of time attending classes. Like that's what I do.
I think if that's not obvious at this point, people just aren't listening.
I really want to mitigate it as much as I can. And I did used to be a chronic insomniac. And as I said, I did used to have, you know, I had huge addiction issues and, you know, I had crazy work-life balance and, yeah, my life was just so intense and I burnt out, like I completely burnt out. And that, you know, I guess it was a great thing because it's led me down this path of understanding even more about myself, but it's something that I really would love other people to avoid if they don't have to walk that path. And part of the reason why I walked that path was my chronic blue light exposure. It changes your mood, your motivation, your ability to rest. You don't feel safe in your body when your stress hormones are out of whack. It's not possible. Yeah. Like if I'm feeling hypervigilant, how safe do I feel inside of myself? And if we don't have a sense of belonging inside of ourselves, we don't have a sense of belonging with others. And that's where a lot of the division and distrust that flows out from inside of us goes out into the world, into our relationships, into our communities, into our political systems, into our consumer systems, you know? So yeah. Blue light exposure is huge because it has everything to do with our growth and development and metabolism, our immune function, all of it. And so did I make it kind of clear what blue light is?
Yeah, no, totally, totally. And I think the bit that if anybody's listening to take out of that is just that the midday thing, you're a circadian being, your body operates on this idea of, you know, a bit of a cortisol spike in the morning, which wakes you up. And it does that because the sun rises and that sun ideally sends you information. And some people know that they need the light because if they're in a dark room, they feel like it's 7 a.m. all of the time until they actually open the curtains and they're like, oh my God, it's midday. And they're confronted with, again, the light. Mm. And so I think that understanding that your body responds to the sun and the light and that, yeah, if you're telling your body at 11 p.m. lying in bed staring at your phone that it's midday, then your body is going to prepare itself for digestion and metabolism as if it's midday. And then it's like, well, of course my sleep is fucked, right? Because my body thinks it's midday.
Totally. And it's also, it is incredibly dehydrating overall, like that, because it's a blue light wavelength and it's a high energy wavelength that does change the electron and proton flow in our body. And it will change our mitochondria's ability, not just to make ATP, but it changes its signaling molecules. So heaps more reactive oxygen species are released. So our cells are like literally emitting more light internally as a danger signal because they've got so much blue light coming in. I also just, in terms of wavelengths, if you think about it, if we were out in the midday sun, it would also be really high UV time. Like the sun obviously emits all of these other frequencies of light. We would get hot. We would move away from the blue light.
Yeah.
But blue light from screens and devices, we do not have the evolutionary adaptability to be able to be like, oh, time out. Like I've got to move away from this device. And in fact, they have designed these devices specifically to drain our dopamine so that we are more addicted to it. And there's a number of studies that, you know, are aware of the, you know, device addictions and how they work. And that has been known since they were created. And they also have done lots of studies on blue light exposure for workers, for shift workers. Like they know that it will make people work more and harder. They're more alert under really intense blue light. And there's a reason why casinos have, you know, blue flashing lights and alcohol, you know, like they are tapping in to our circadian biology to make it more addictive to stay there. And yeah, it's part of consumerism. It's part of greed. And it's a scary thing about how easily when we're disconnected, we lose our sense of self and we just go along for the ride. But the flicker from artificial lights can be really intense. Like we don't necessarily recognize it when we're looking at TVs and laptop screens and even our phone screens. But there can be a pretty intense range of flicker on pretty much most devices. That flicker is really disruptive for our brainwaves. And when our brainwaves are disrupted, we've got different access to different parts of our brain, how we think, why we think, and the different habits and behaviors that flow on from there.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Pia, like, we could talk forever, but I want you to come back because I think actually that we're going to have to do like 5 or 10 podcast episodes where we just go deeper and deeper and deeper. But to round out this one, for podcast one, what are the big takeaways from this conversation you want people to have from installment one of the Maddie and Pia show?
Installment one. And I know that there's so many things that I'm like, oh, we'll think later. I had said that or talk about that. And I'm so glad that we can extend this conversation because I feel like there's so many layers that I would love to engage people with.
Oh, me too.
Thanks everyone for listening. But really it's our translation of light, like our skin is we have so many light receptors in our skin and in our eyes. The more skin you have in the game literally will change your life. And so as often as you can be barefoot, bare skin, bare eyes, like that is how we get to change a lot of the negative impacts of our modern life and really take control of our real natural life, our true life, our source light will flow so much easier when we've got more skin in the game.
I love that you use that phrase, skin in the game. And I mean, you know, we're in Australia and a lot of the audience is Australian and maybe this is a whole other podcast, but we're really discouraged.
Well, I'd love to talk about sunburn and solar colors.
Yeah, we're told to stay away from the sun and it's dangerous and it's bad and it's toxic. And I would agree that that's half of the cancer problem is that we're being told to stay inside.
A lack of sunlight increases. They have done many studies on it. Lack of sunlight increases all-cause mortality.
Yep.
You will die faster and from more things when you have less sunlight, for sure, hands down.
Totally, totally. So where can people find you on the interwebs?
So piakynoch.com, which is piakynoch.com, but also the easiest way is just look up Pia, the spiritual naturopath on social media.
Amazing. I will, of course, put those links in the show notes below. And we obviously will book in another one very soon to continue this conversation to the next level. But to wrap up, what is one piece of health information you wish more people knew about?
You have every single piece of power inside of you that you have ever been looking for outside of you.
Oh, mic drop. That's awesome. Thanks for being here, Pia. I appreciate your time and your energy and all of the work that you're doing and you have done to get to this point of being just such a vast source of knowledge. So thank you.
Thank you, Maddie.
No worries. See you soon.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.